This is CliffCentral.com.
Please note that the views expressed and the advice provided in this show are for general advice and entertainment purposes only. Nothing stated should be treated as a substitute for your own independent legal advice based on your own specific facts and objectives. Therefore, the presenter and CliffCentral.com accept no liability of any nature whatsoever, either expressed or implied.
Law, like you've never heard it before. The Laws of Life, with Gary Hertzberg on CliffCentral.com.
I'm Gary Hertzberg, and this is The Laws of Life on CliffCentral.com. Alongside me today, Lionel Makokotlele. Welcome to you, Lions.
Thank you very much, Gary, and welcome to our podcasters. It's Tuesday, the circus legal show in the continent is on.
Today's show, Lions, is about early release of our prisoners. And in Afrikaans, they call it die gevangenis.
You?
Which is quite a scary word, isn't it?
Yes.
Gevangenis.
It sounds so rough.
That's really what it is, right? You must rot in gevangenis. Anyway. The question we're going to be asking today is, how long should a prisoner serve before being released? I guess it depends on the case. Right now, Lines, I think you know that rape and sexual abuse of our children is very prevalent.
Certainly.
And, you know, when we think of the dross rape of that little girl in the restaurant bathroom alone, it's enough to make us South Africans sick to the core.
Certainly.
The question we're going to ask you, really, and this applies to everyone, and our listeners will want to contribute on this one, should monsters like that rape little girls, and doesn't matter what, may murder your loved one, whatever, should they be released early? Or should they stay in die gevangenis, in the prison where they belong?
It's a very emotive one, but I guess this is where then the law comes into the picture. And I don't know what the law says in this regard, because we don't deal with criminal matters. But I'm very curious to actually find out what is actually the position of the law in regard to early releases of prisoners who actually have committed crime. But the reality of the matter is, if they were to be released, what sort of message is it sending to the public? Because then again, it just seems like some animals are more equal than others. Why should they be released, not serve the full term? But again, as I said, law is quite a very complex.
The law on this one is very interesting. We're going to talk about it later, Lance. I think you'll remember, and we've done this before, this show, not in this format, but we have interviewed a number of women. They're now women. They were little girls when they were raped. Certainly. By the infamous tennis player Bob Hewitt.
Yes.
They were 12 years old, two of them. He raped them. He was supposed to be coaching them, and he raped these little girls. And right now, we're actually pleased to report that Bob Hewitt right now...
He's in the jailhouse now. He's in the jailhouse now. He's in the jailhouse now. He's in the jailhouse now.
Where do you get this music? I know this honky-tonk stuff appeals to you. You go home and listen to it at home, don't you?
You're one of a kind, I must say.
One of Bob Hewitt's victims. We make light of this, but it's not a light subject.
Certainly.
Sometimes we just got to introduce a note of levity, as I call it, so that we can just relax and take a breath. One of Bob Hewitt's victims, she's a woman now, as I said. She's in her 40s. When she was 12, he raped her in the car at the tennis courts, and he's messed up her life. Sex for her is not enjoyable. Her life is hard. She's had a problem with her parents on this one. In fact, she was reluctant to come into the studio today, and I said to her, it's up to her.
It's understandable.
She's not here now. She said she'll be in, and I'm sure she will. Her name is Olivia. So, although he's in the jailhouse, Bob Hewitt, he's trying to break serve and get out, but he's facing a formidable opponent in this woman, Olivia. She's not going to take this one lying down, as they said.
Bravo to her. And I think it just shows that she's actually taking power into her own hands. And that's what needs to actually be taking place. Women need to stand up for their own rights and stand up for what they really believe. And if they feel that injustice has been done, they must actually make it a point that they speak loud. Then we can actually listen to their voices and support their cause.
Bob Hewitt got 6 years prison. I'm subject to correction. He's been in for 2 years and he wants to get out. He's pulling all kinds of tricks to get out. And Olivia and two of the other girls that were raped and abused have consulted with a wonderful man. He does all this out of the goodness of his heart. He doesn't charge them for it. His name is Peter van Niekerk, and he's the managing partner at Attorneys Evershed Sutherland, a very prestigious old firm in Johannesburg. He's also director of the Teddy Bear Foundation. You don't find many people like this that do all this pro bono work, but he does. He's today accompanied by his candidate attorney, Georgia Barnard. Welcome to you both, and many thanks for doing this.
Thanks very much, and thanks for having us.
Cool. You guys are acting for the three ladies, and you are opposing Bob Hewitt's application. And this show is presented in collaboration with Legal Talk South Africa, who, as I always say, have a massive membership, Facebook membership, close to 200,000. And this, the promo of the show was loaded by Ray Green, the founder, on their webpage, on their Facebook page. And it's already got a stream of comments. People are going crazy on this one. Some people are saying, look, he's 80 years old, he's had enough, let him go. Mm-hmm. Others are pulling their hair out. How dare he be released after raping and messing up the lives of these little girls so early? So it's your call. If you want to phone in and share with us on this one, I'm going to give out a phone number. We don't usually, because most of our listeners are on podcasts. If you're listening live, phone this number and let us know how you feel about it. We get quite emotional on this one, don't we, Lance?
Certainly.
0861. And then it's easy. 555-189. 0861-555-189. There's someone I want to talk to that's on the line right now. And before I get to our attorneys, let's take the call. Celeste. Hi, Celeste. Celeste. I don't know what she's doing. Maybe she's printing.
Celeste. Just sounds like a technical glitch.
Okay, we'll come back to Celeste. Are you there, Celeste? She's on the line. Celeste. Okay. Let's try. I'm going to leave it to our controller.
Then let's just be quiet.
Okay, I think the noise is coming from the. Celeste is dying to speak to us about this issue, but we'll try and get her back. We'll hold this one. Try again. See what you can do.
Yeah.
It'll be nice to speak to Celeste.
No, certainly.
Let's talk to our attorneys before Olivia comes into studio. She's maybe hiding around the corner and listening on the side. I'm sure she is. Peter van Niekerk, you've known about this case for many years now. This first came to the fore a number of years ago when, I think, I'm talking from memory, there was a journalist from the Boston Globe in the USA that picked up the story and he ran with it. And then he came to South Africa. Bob Hewitt was a star at that time. He was a member of the International Hall of Fame for tennis players. And he arrived in South Africa seeking, I think, Olivia and one or two others to say, had Bob Hewitt raped you as well, or molested you, or abused you? And a number of girls came forward. I just think these two for the moment. Were you around when this happened, Peter? Or when were you brought into this?
So, as I understand it, and this happened before my involvement, the story broke in America. A woman, a tennis player who had been coached by Hewitt, as I understand it, came forward and said she had been abused by him. And that, I think, got the Boston Globe involved, and they were very instrumental in both investigating the matter, both in America and South Africa. I then got involved when one of the victims went to the Teddy Bear Foundation, and pursuant to that happening, I started acting for her, and that just grew like topsy, and eventually a whole lot of women contacted me, and obviously being a criminal case, all I could do was obtain statements and assist the prosecuting authorities, which in fact I did to a greater or lesser extent right the way through until the charges were actually laid. So that was my background into the matter.
Yeah, Peter, I just want to give the phone number. Won't you give this phone number, please? That's Celeste. She's phoning through. She's trying to get through. The girls were raped about 30 years prior to the arrest of Bob Hewitt. And the law at that time was uncertain, wasn't it?
So, it was. Yeah. There were all sorts of legal problems that the state faced, as I say, because obviously it was the state. From what I recall, there was problems with prescription. Mm. There were problems with the definition of rape. And, of course, there were the problems of the woman not having come forward for so long.
Yeah.
Those were partially practical problems, memories fading, etc., etc. But
how did the girls, when they came to you 6 years ago or so, or whenever it was when this case started, how did they feel to know that they could nail Bob Hewitt?
I think there was a great degree of closure on their part, in the sense you can imagine sitting, having this over your head for so long, and I think they got strength in numbers, and knowing that there were others who were in the same position, certainly it gave them the strength to follow through, because of course one has to show a lot of bravery to go through with charges of this nature.
Yeah. Eventually, the girls, the matter was brought before the High Court in Johannesburg, and Bob Hewitt was convicted, and he got a 6-year sentence after going on appeal. I think there were a number of appeals, weren't there?
He actually got 8 years. Mm. He got 8 years for the two rapes. He raped a 12 and a 13-year-old, and he was convicted of sexual assault in regard to the 17-year-old. He got 8 years. Two of them were suspended, provided that he paid, I think it was 100,000 rand, to the, I think it was Department of Correctional Services.
Mm.
But his actual sentence is 8 years, and that becomes relevant as possibly Georgia could go through the time limits in due course as to when you're entitled to apply for parole. But so it's worked out on that 8 years, and as you correctly point out, he then appealed to the Supreme Court of Appeals. That was dismissed. He then went to the Constitutional Court, and they in turn dismissed it on the basis that his chances of, his prospects of success were bad.
I also believe, and I think Olivia told us once, that he was sued in the US by one of the girls. Because there it's much easier to sue for punitive damages, for the hurt that you've sustained. I think it ran into millions. I don't know what ever happened to that matter. Would you by any chance know?
I don't. I also heard that one of the victims, not in the South African case, had sued him and done so successfully, but I'm not on top of that.
Mm. I just want to check, is Celeste back on the line, because she's... yeah. Is she there for us? Celeste, we're going to talk to you now. Celeste?
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, we can. Hi, Celeste. Where are you from? Where are you calling from?
I'm in Kimberley.
Oh, of all places. Okay, cool.
Of all places.
Yeah. What's the weather like there? It must be hot.
It is very, very hot.
So you're a great supporter of Olivia. And
I am.
I know you've said that she fights relentlessly for her rights, which she does. How do you feel about all this? Yeah. How do you feel about... go ahead.
I think the thing is that people very seldom understand how much survivors of abuse go through and how much of a journey it is for them for the rest of their lives. And I'm speaking from experience from myself, although I'm very different to Olivia because she had the gumption to go to court. And I didn't do that. But it takes a huge toll on a person. And you get re-traumatized over and over again. And I think that people don't understand that, that it's a life sentence. I don't think they get the depth of that. Yeah. And that, you know, you can put someone in jail for however much time. But for us, we go work through the process of healing for the rest of our lives. Mm-hmm. Celeste, and Olivia is an example of that, a huge example of that. And the whole system of how she went through the whole process, she gets re-traumatized all the time.
I know she does, yeah. I think she's too scared to come into studio today as well. For the very reason, yes. She doesn't want to relive this. She's trying to walk away from it, and no one's allowing her to because he's applying to be released.
Which I think is absolutely ludicrous.
Well, let me ask you this question. He's a man of 80, I guess, somewhere around there. He's been there two years. The counter argument to all this is enough, not enough. How much retribution should there be? How long should he sit? What harm is he going to cause? Yeah. Go ahead.
From a survivor's perspective, because our organization, the organization that I'm with, that I founded, we are survivors for survivors. That's how we work. And this is my perspective. Olivia has served how many years already? She will carry on serving until she can heal all of this, which takes a very, very long time. And speaking for myself, I don't know if there's ever completely healed because you keep having repercussions. Mm-hmm. Yes, he was old when he got to court. Yes, he was old when he was sentenced. And that was taken into consideration in his sentence. And we believe, you know, no bail, max jail. He must spend his time there. He must do his time. Because that 6 years is nothing in comparison to what the girls, the survivors that he hurt, what he did to them. It's nothing. It's a drop in the ocean. Mm-hmm. The other thing is, you know, he needs to at least show some remorse as well, which would be good.
Yeah, he's shown no remorse. Isn't that the argument here? There's no remorse.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I think the thing is people are getting like all emotional about his age. And it seems to be a trend in South Africa that we have this thing about the perpetrator, the perpetrator's age, you know, the perpetrator's circumstances. I shame the perpetrator. But what about the survivors? I don't think survivors' rights are taken equally, and you know, they're human rights. Mm. I think the human rights of the perpetrators are taken more seriously than the human rights of the survivors. Mm. And we've seen that in other cases that have been going on now.
Celeste, you talk to us about your organization and the petition that we want people to sign. Tell us all about that.
Yeah. Okay, so our organization is Optimistic Bikers Against Abuse. We've been around since 2011. Yeah. Our organization came about through my journey to healing. And then we were a whole group of friends and we started a real organization because we saw the demand. So we work on a survivors for survivors basis. We take on activism cases like this where we'll do petitions and that. Yeah. But we also do hands-on healing with survivors. So we walk a healing journey, give tips, emotional support, advice, you know, when do you need a lawyer, when do you need a psychologist, that kind of thing. And we do education as well. So we're a very small organization. We do a lot of our work online because we are based in Kimberley. But we travel. So I go where I'm most needed. And then with a petition like this, this petition is so that he doesn't get his sentence commuted to community supervision. Mm-hmm. Because I don't see why he should. I mean, I don't see one good reason why his sentence should be commuted to anything. He hasn't even served half his sentence yet.
Absolutely. Tell us about Mini Me Too. Hashtag Mini Me Too. Yeah.
I actually really love the hashtag Mini Me Too campaign because I'm a survivor of child abuse, well, child sexual abuse, as well as other abuses that go with that. You know, it's never one thing only. Mm. No, there's a whole lot of stuff that interlinks. So I'm a survivor myself. And when I was young, there was no way to speak out. But I had different circumstances. So I was in circumstances where some people actually knew and just didn't do anything about it. So I think the Mini Me Too campaign is really great because it addresses, although it's Mini Me Too, it addresses parents as well. And it's saying we need to be responsible for our kids. We need to make an environment where our children can speak out. Because it's not that easy to speak out. Even if you tell your child they can speak out, it's difficult. Mm. So I think, you know, it's a really good education campaign, not only for teenagers who can then speak out, but for parents to be aware of where the dangers for their children are coming from.
Cool. Celeste, if anyone listening wants to get hold of you and your Bikers Association, do you have a website or something or Facebook
we
page?
We do.
Yeah.
Give we it do. Our website has got a few issues at the moment, but Facebook is up. On Facebook, we're Optimistic, and it's spelled OptimyStic. MCC. But if you search Optimistic like that, you'll find us. And they can phone me anytime. So I can give my number, which is 071-427-0187.
Okay, that's the voice of Celeste. What's your surname, Celeste?
Lowe.
Good. Okay.
Celeste Lowe.
Many thanks, Celeste. We appreciate
it's an
this.
Absolute
the
pleasure.
The petition, we know where to go. Does everyone?
Yes, and the link is on our website. Mm. It's on our website, our Facebook page. You can catch us on Instagram and Twitter as well. And we put it up regularly there so that people can go and just click and sign. It takes like 2 seconds. It's really not painful.
What is
and
the petition
really
to stop him from getting out? Is that the petition?
The petition is actually, and so that he doesn't get community supervision. Mm-hmm. So we want him to stay in jail because he needs to stay in jail. He needs to understand that he cannot trivialize what he did. You know, mm-hmm. And we feel that if we can make people understand this, that letting people out of jail early trivializes their crime. We don't want that. We want people to understand that if you hurt our children or you murdering our women or even if you're murdering our men, let's face it.
Absolutely.
If you're doing this kind of thing, there's going to be no quarter given and you need to have a sentence and you're going to sit there. If it's 25 years, you're going to sit for 25 years because we don't want to hear your whinging. We don't want you to be doing these things.
Yes.
I think the statistics are too high for us to have the – you know, all of this let out of jail for free type of thing. Mm. We can see it with bail as well. Okay. I mean, if we let out people on bail and then they go and commit the same crime again.
Good.
It's
good,
crazy.
Good stuff, Celeste. Keep going. Many thanks
Absolutely.
For this. We really appreciate it. Yeah.
Thanks for having me online. Good.
Great. Lovely. Now we've got good news. We've got really good news. Yes. Someone's just walked into our studio. And let me tell you about this girl. This girl's on fire.
Yes.
This girl, this is the girl, Olivia. You're on fire, Olivia. Welcome.
Hi, Gary.
Even, you know, you made a late statement, but good to see you. I'm so pleased you walked in. Yeah.
Thanks for having me.
This is your anthem, isn't it?
It is indeed.
Yeah. I picked it up somewhere. This girl is really on fire. And I know you're trying to shy away from this in a way because it's hurtful, terribly hurtful, isn't it, to you?
I'm just sick and tired of it, to be quite honest.
You'd actually like to just walk away from it and just leave me alone kind of thing, but you can't because this man's trying to get an early release, and unless you oppose it, he's gonna get a release. So what's the answer?
You know, Gary?
Yeah.
When I was a little girl, he taught me that I get every single ball back. Well, that's going to be the lesson he's going to regret teaching me.
Mm.
I will get every single ball back, and I will hit that last ball.
You're going to smash him out of court. You're going to serve one ace after another.
Indeed.
Talking of aces, we have your attorney in studio today. As we introduced earlier, you guys, through Peter, your attorney, and his candidate, Georgia, you are applying to oppose this application.
Yes, we are.
Was your decision difficult to do it? Did you want to leave it and just let the court or the parole authorities take a decision, or how did you feel about it?
Initially, I started off and I was like, no, I'm not doing this. Then I went through a phase where okay, I'll do it. Then I went through a phase where I'm not doing it, and today I'm doing it. So we're going to do it. We have to do it. We have to see this through.
Yeah. You know, the counter argument is that he's had enough. He's 80 years old. Let him go.
I've also had enough, Gary, but I've got another 40 years ahead of me. So, no, he must stay.
Mm. Why? Why is the argument? I'm not in favor of that argument, but why should he stay?
You know, Gary, for a start, he's actually served less than half of the time it took us to put him away. Mm. 2 years does not by any means even begin to pay for what he's done to our lives. Over and above that, he's laughing at us. He hasn't shown any remorse. Mm. He's not ever come forward. I mean, the most...
He never admitted to doing anything,
Oh, no,
did he?
He did, but he said it wasn't violent. No. So no, he has admitted to it, but he said it wasn't violent, and based on that, he shouldn't go to prison.
Didn't he say something about you should enjoy this, or to one of the girls?
That was something that he said it was to one of the girls when we were younger, and the quote was, because he quoted it twice in court while he was on the stand. He said that in all cases, rape is inevitable, and when it happens, you must just lie back and enjoy it.
I mean, can you lines? Yeah.
And he wants to go home. No.
He
said that. He admitted to saying it.
I mean, what kind of message is that to the,
exactly.
to the public?
In fact, he said he never said it to a girl. He said it to guys. But the fact of the matter is he said it.
Okay. Let's talk about where he's being housed in the Gevangenis, as we call it, which is a word I like, the Gevangenis. That's where he is. St. Albans Correctional Centre in the Eastern Cape is renowned for being one of the toughest, most notorious prisons, home to over 3,000 inmates. It's certainly not one of the most pleasant gevangenis to be in, is it?
Well, he's in frail care. So, you know, as far as I understand, he's on his own in a cell, and he comes out for an hour or two a day. That's what I've been told. I don't know how true that is. Mm. But I think he's living the life. I think he's got it okay there. I don't think he's struggling.
You haven't spoken to his family or his mother, his wife or anything?
No, thank you.
No. Mm-hmm. Have they tried to, anyone tried to contact you?
Actually, no. They've been very, very, very quiet. But a lot of people crawl out from all over the show every now and then and I get some feedback, but no, nothing.
Okay, let's talk a little law because I think our listeners want to know, what is this parole and early release? How does it work? So, Peter, you're going to take us through. There's two aspects of law that I know. One is parole. And then the other that I think he's applying for. Who wants to take us through what the other is, Georgia or Peter, or who wants to start off?
perhaps let me just tell you the difference in the various early releases, and then perhaps Georgia can take you through the time limits. Mm-hmm. So there's a difference between parole, which is early release, and correctional supervision, which he's applying for, which is really a conversion of the original sentence to, for example, house arrest. And they're legally very different animals because they've got different procedures and different time limits. Mm. George will take you through why he's applying for correctional supervision because...
Let's ask Georgia that one. Why correctional supervision? Is that more advantageous for him as opposed to parole?
So he's applying for correctional supervision because it is possibly the earliest thing he can apply for to try and get out of jail. Mm-hmm. So if you apply for correctional supervision, you only have to have served a quarter of your sentence. So because Bob got 8 years sentence, 2 years suspended, he's now served a quarter, and so he can apply for them to convert his sentence. He would only be able to apply for parole after serving half of his sentence.
So who would want to apply for parole then? Why wouldn't everyone apply for correctional supervision if it's only a quarter?
I think just because then you would have to go through the process again of trying to apply for parole. Correctional supervision also, this only applies to, because his sentence, he got sentenced to over and above 5 years.
Okay. So if your sentence is more than 5 years, then you can apply for correctional supervision?
Yes.
After a quarter?
Yes.
So a murderer, rapist, whatever it is, he hijacker, these monsters that are roaming our streets, that are put in the gefangenes, can get out after a quarter on correctional supervision.
Yes, but
what does it mean, correctional supervision?
So correctional supervision, they call it a community-based sentence. So you're supposed to serve out your sentence in the community under house arrest. Sometimes you're not allowed to leave your magisterial district, have to do community service programs.
Can you go to bowls, and can you go to play cricket, and can you go to movies?
No, it's
you got to sit in your house.
Yes, and you have to do quite rigorous treatment programs, community service programs. Yeah.
So I mean, is house arrest actually house arrest, or is it just a term that is used loosely? It means that people can float around their district, or have they
house arrest is if you're not at work, you have to be at your house. There's
so
no,
you can go to work.
Yes.
Okay.
But you will have to be strictly supervised.
Well, how do they do that, really? They put they have these things they put around. What are they called, like?
Yeah, like ankle guards.
Ankle guards, yeah, that they can monitor you. I don't know how effective, if the country's got enough resources for it.
But I mean, if you're retired or if you're a pensioner, you just have to stay in your house.
So if you commit a bank robbery and you steal hundreds of millions and you get 10 years, you're out after 2.5, it's maybe a good deal.
I think
it's crazy when you think about it.
Gary, the two different procedures are important because correctional supervision entails effectively applying to the parole board, who in turn then make recommendations to the original judge.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a far more onerous and arduous procedure than just applying to the parole board. So when you say it's as easy as that...
So you apply for correctional supervision, you apply to court?
Well, you first apply to the parole board, and that the victims, which we can maybe touch on later, get given the opportunity to make representations, etc. But the parole board then, after hearing all the representations, then refers it back to the original judge.
And if he's dead after 20 years or 10 years?
Who the judge?
Yes.
Then another judge.
Then another judge will take it.
Yeah.
And they will have to get the record and so on.
But you've got to bear in mind that he's fighting a fairly uphill battle in the sense of both the Supreme Court of Appeal and the Constitutional Court found that his sentence was wholly appropriate. So they're going to have to convince the original judge, who's fortified by the highest courts in the land, that he was wrong. So,
sorry, Pete, if the parole board says we'll give you the release, you still got to get sanctioned from the High Court.
So in correctional supervision...
And they can overrule the parole board, is that...
No, so in correctional supervision, the parole board, as I understand it, has got no authority.
Okay.
They just compile a report. They bring in his submissions, the victim's submissions, medical reports, psychological reports.
So they recommend...
Can consider.
Mm-hmm. And of course, they can recommend that he doesn't get parole, which in event, I would imagine the chances of them getting it, or when I say parole, correctional supervision.
Mm.
Whereas with parole, the parole board has the authority to give you parole, but then you've got to, as Georgia was saying, got to have served much longer of your sentence.
Mm-hmm.
And when I say it's easier, you don't have to go through the additional hoop of going to the High Court, back to the court aqua.
I see that your representations opposing his early release is being made in terms of the Criminal Procedure Act. What does all that mean? What are you doing here? What are your representations all about for the three girls?
So, whilst we are acting for the three girls, and insofar as we're entitled to, we're also acting for various organizations.
Yes, who are these organizations?
There's the Teddy Bear Foundation.
Mm.
There's the Women and Men Against Child Abuse.
The Reva
Steenkamp Foundation, yeah.
I think
and then I think the very Bikers Association, Optimistic Bikers Against Abuse. They're part of the representations, yeah.
Bikers Against Bullies and Get Up Women.
Okay, good. That's so they are all grouped together to oppose the early release. Is that what's going on?
I must make it clear that the Act provides a mechanism for the victims to make representations. Mm. This has just really gained momentum, and insofar as the court is concerned, we are making representations in regard to the various foundations we've mentioned, but it doesn't necessarily mean that the parole board will place any weight in regard to their representation.
I see in your court papers, which I like, you said here that one of the victims was molested over a couple of years, and Hewitt shockingly told her, and this is what Olivia said earlier, that rape is enjoyable in all cases, and that if he raped her, she should just lie down and enjoy it. And the judge will see this, isn't it?
That was on the record. That was taken out of the record.
Mm. So that's good.
The judge,
Judge
is...
He's going to read that, yeah.
Well, he's going to read it, but he's already heard it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, let him read it again and hear it again. And let him listen to the show and hear it again. Any man who says that... You shouldn't walk the streets, if you don't mind me saying that.
Well, you know, when you talk about he showed no remorse, one of the representations is that when he applied, when he argued in mitigation, I think it was to the Supreme Court of Appeal, it might even been to the Court au quo, he said that he shouldn't be given too heavy a sentence because he didn't damage the one victim's vagina, and the other representation he made was that when the other child that he raped told him it was sore, he stopped. Now one...
Oh, he says that's his mitigation.
Well,
because it was because she said it was sore, he then stopped after he had already penetrated and hurt her.
So we think that's
how embarrassing is it for him to have said something like that? Yeah.
That was
how
said
stupid
on the,
is it? Yeah.
On the record, and to me, that's an...
Are you the little girl, Olivia? Forgive me. Was it you?
I'm not actually sure. No. I was the one that...
You.
I was the one he didn't damage.
Yeah.
He didn't damage you.
That's an aggravator.
Psychologically, maybe. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's an argument in aggravation, not in mitigation.
One would have thought so, but that was made to Georgia Martin. Was that to the Supreme Court of Appeals, or was that in the original?
I think it was in the original.
I mean, can you imagine saying that? When she started crying that it was sore, I withdrew. I mean, how ridiculous is that?
And that somehow softens your conduct. I mean, it's difficult to...
It's difficult to comprehend, isn't it, Olivia?
Yeah. It actually is, and I actually just want to raise something. I mean, his representation did everything they could to try and get me to admit that I consented.
Mm.
And the judge kept on saying, but she was 12 years old.
Yes.
And he kept on saying, but she consented. And I said, no, I accepted that this is what I had to do. Mm. And, you know, it just goes back. It's just he has no remorse. He does not think he did anything wrong. And that scares me.
How can he believe that? I mean, how stupid is the human nature to really believe that?
Arrogant or stupid? I think arrogant.
It gets to a point where people tend to lie to themselves, and they start believing their own lie and think that every single person will be convinced by their lies. So this is basically one of those psychological mind game that people trying to play.
Well, 100%. I mean, he at one point, I think he thought he might have even owned us, because he said that he was being a fatherly figure to us, which means that he had identified that we did not have good relationships with our parents or our dads. And it came out, it was very clear that he was being fatherly towards us.
Mm. I know that from a parole point of view, you sit around a table, actually, the victims and the prisoners, and you confront one another. You can actually talk to one another. You can engage. You can say what you like. Is this what's going to happen in this case, or is it going to be on paper only? Excuse me, we'll ask Olivia the same question. Would she like to sit in front of him and talk to him about this?
Well, in this case, it's on the papers only. Mm-hmm. So the victims will make their representations. He's obviously applied, given his reasons. And as Georgia mentioned, I think there's psychologists' reports, etc. We haven't been given access to any of that. But then, having regard to all of those various factors, the parole board. So there's no...
I've spoken to the, we've spoken to the area commissioner, and he did say that if when it, the application is heard, if the victims would like to make an oral representation, they can apply for that too.
How do you feel about that, Olivia? I mean, would you like to sit across the table with this man and talk to him about what he did to you?
If I knew that there was going to be a constructive conversation, I probably would. But I don't believe for 1 minute there would be a constructive
conversation. How do you think he'd react to you?
I don't think it would go very well, and I don't think he'd actually ever admit that, that he did what he did.
Well, he's in prison, for whether he admits it or not, 100%, he's there.
Yes.
You know what happens when they want to get out, they'll say anything. They'll say they love you.
Of course they will.
He's gonna give you what you want to hear and say probably he's sorry because he wants to get out of the gevangenis.
Well, you know what? He can give me what I want to hear, but if he doesn't mean it, I'm going to know he doesn't mean it. You know, whether we have a conversation or not, no.
Would that release something in you? Would you feel easier sitting across the table from him?
You know, Gary, up until September when I received the message to say that he was doing this, I had a huge sense of relief. What this has done to me in terms of setting me back has been massive. So, no, it wouldn't give me a sense. He must stay where he belongs. That'll give me a sense of relief.
Ultimately, he's going to come out. Why does that frighten you so much? He's going to walk the streets, whether it's now or whenever, in a year or two or three. Why does it scare you?
You know, my first reaction when I got the message was that I'm scared. And I am scared of him. I'm terrified of him.
But he's not going to come after you.
Sure. He might, but I wouldn't put it past him to send somebody. It won't. You know, I've got recordings of where him and his wife threatened my life, and they threatened my child's life. And
he could
I take
do
it
now.
Seriously.
He could do it now from prison if he was going to send someone else after you.
He could.
I just don't want you to be scared of this process.
I am.
I want you to kind of, you have to deal with it. And I know that it's affecting you. And I've seen some of the writings, your writings. And I know you're hurting like hell. And you're doing so well. You have been doing so well. You're really a girl on fire.
Now you make me cry again.
No, but you haven't. Tell us about your tennis career and your job. And I just want to hear the good things as well.
Let me just go back a step. You know, I feel a lot better now that I know that it's going to be heard in Joburg, number one, and that it's going to be heard. I feel a lot better. If it was just a written submission and it was some random people making a decision on my emotional stability and the future of me, I didn't feel good about that at all. Mm. I feel a whole lot better now that I know it's going to go through a proper process because, again, I have a voice. Mm. And that's very important. It's when we don't have voices that it doesn't work out well.
Yeah.
So yes, I'm happier that it's going forward in the way that it is. Mm. Tennis is great. Work is fantastic. Life is good. Mm. I want it to stay that way. I don't want to have to be re-traumatized and re-victimized.
Is this a bit of a trauma for you to sit here and talk about it?
Not so much sitting here talking about it. Just in general, it's a trauma. I'm back where I was 3-4 years ago.
Mm. It's a bit of a setback. I know you're trying to... At some point, you said you don't want to come into studio.
I didn't. No, yeah. I didn't.
I think today you came in late because you couldn't face it. And I think they dragged you in here. Sure.
You were relentless.
I I'm doing this because...
Because you love me, I know.
Truthfully, I just want the best for you.
I know,
and
Gary.
If people will support you and rally around you and oppose this thing and be there for you, which they are, this is going to make it a lot easier because, unfortunately... You have to deal with this. I mean, I don't have to lecture you. But
I do, Gary. And you know what? I'm going to do it because it's not only just for me. It's for my grandchildren. Mm. It's for all the other children out there.
Tell us about your grandchild quickly.
I have two of them. One is 6 and one is 4. Mm. They live in Asna with their mom and dad. Mm. They're growing nice and big. And yeah.
How do you feel about this, Georgia? What do you think is going to happen? How's it going to play out? in court or in the parole, at the parole hearing? What do you think will happen?
Well, I think what needs to be mentioned in the Act, and they've said in the directives to the Act, is that it has, this process is very victim sensitive. Mm-hmm. And with all the officials we've dealt with, they do really care about what the victims feel about it, what they have to say. Mm-hmm. They have to give an impact statement, what this has done to their lives and why they do think that he should stay in jail. And I think that it is very geared towards how they feel. Obviously, they take him into account. But I don't know. I hope that our system, it seems like it's
going to work.
Yeah, well.
Yeah, it should work.
I'm hopeful, but yeah.
Before we let you all go, and I know Olivia wants to clear out of here, on fire or not on fire, Peter, you want to sum up on anything on the law side? Or on any side? Yeah.
Perhaps just to continue what Georgia said about the being very victims-centric. Mm. She's quite correct about the parole board being very sensitive, and the Act provides that the parole board's got to take into account what the impact on the victims. But also the courts give the impact of the victims and their views considerable weight. So, you know, he's got quite a lot of hurdles to overcome because the courts will, when considering this, take the victims.
You know, Pete, this is a very public case, and most people know about this. The prisoners languishing in these prisons that may be applying and getting out, and they may be the hijackers who have hijacked, God forbid, someone close to us that you wouldn't even know about. And they're sitting 2 years out of 6 or 8, and they're out, back on the streets. So I kind of think this is quite a good thing for us, that we should be opposing these applications for early release. Although the prisons are overflowing and it costs us a fortune to keep the prisoners, and they claim to be rehabilitated and there are wonderful things happening in the prisons from an educational and from a rehabilitative point of view, but we've got to watch out. You know, this country's full of nasties. We've got to keep them in there if they're bad.
Yeah, you need to consider the severity of the crime, which is something that the courts do.
Mm.
And these are very severe crimes.
Absolutely.
But I think just in parting, your courage and your very nature of actually standing up for yourself, it's actually going to make a huge impact for the coming generation and women as a whole, because we understand that as victims and having to relive the trauma, it can be quite traumatic. So it's like double the impact of the trauma. But being able to talk about it and facing the very same person who thought they would take away your power and be able to speak truth to them, that on its own is powerful. And kudos to you and the many other women who actually stood up for themselves against this man. And we wish you nothing but love and the best for this.
Yeah, Jenny. That's cute, Lars. Thank you.
That is very
thank
inspirational.
To all of you, to Olivia, do you want to end off by saying anything?
I just want to thank everybody for all the support that I've been given. It's absolutely overwhelming. Mm. Thank you.
Cool. You deserve it.
No, we thank you, because without your voice, this wouldn't have been possible. Without your voice, we wouldn't be able to actually be in this position where we can actually talk about this and normalize it, to simply say, women, it's time. Take your power into your own hands. Speak about the abuse and make it a point that it's known, so that we can actually be there to support you. The support might come in the form of us talking about it, in some cases coming to the court with you, just so that at least we can really talk about this so that people get to be empowered. Because you'll never know how many women are going to listen to this and feel the courageousness of actually speaking truth to the people who actually did some deeds.
For sure.
Don't forget to sign the petition. And
Please sign my petition.
Yeah, where can we find it on your site?
You can find it on, it's open on my Facebook site. It's being shared through all the various organizations. We share it constantly. It's popping up all over the
show. So if we Google petition against Bob Hewitt's early release, or how do...
It's headed Stop Child Rape.
Okay.
Yes.
Good stuff. Georgia Barnard, candidate lawyer. Well done. You're going to be a great little lawyer. You're tenacious. Good,
thank
good
you,
on
thank
you.
You. Gary.
And then to your boss, an old timer, old fox. Oh, yakals, they call him Peter van Niekerk. Well done to you, Peter. Thank you for everything. And then to our special people, that's our listeners. Without you, we wouldn't do these shows. Many thanks for listening. To you, Lions, thank you. And till next week, cheers.
Thank you. Bye.
Law, like you've never heard it before. The Laws of Life with Gary Hertzberg on cliffcentral.com.